This is a Triple J podcast.
Neural pathways associated with self-sabotage is that they actually feel good in the moment. So you get this dopamine hit going, oh, relief.
Hey, Dee here for the Hookup Podcast. And if you're new, we talk all things love, sex, dating, relationships. You can go find our beautiful community at our Instagram at Triple J The Hookup. But every week we do two episodes. And the other day we did an episode about having a type. And in this episode, we heard from some of you who were like, okay, I have a very specific type and that type is bad for me. I have this pattern of always going for the wrong person. And this was so relatable, right? Like, I think sometimes we do really just get in our own way, but it could be for so many different reasons. And sometimes reasons we might not even understand, right? Like, it could be something unconscious that you're kind of doing in a pattern that you don't realize. So I wanted to do an episode on self-sabotage, whether that's in dating. I don't know, maybe you always bail when you get too close to someone, you always ghost or cancel after a few dates. Maybe you go for people, like I said, who aren't that great for you and you know that, but you keep doing it. Or maybe you're in the relationship stage, but you're always picking fights and you're always trying to find something that's wrong. Or maybe you come on really intense really quickly and just try and scare them off like, this is me, like, love it or hate it. You can tell that I relate to some of this. But whatever it is or whatever cycle or pattern that you're stuck in, we are going to find out how to stop that today. And here to help is Dr. Rebecca Ray. She's a clinical psychologist, author of many books, but author of new book, How to Stop Spiraling, Break the Cycles of Triggers, Trauma Responses, and Self-Sabotage. So she's the most perfect person to chat about this today. Dr. Beck, thank you so much for coming on The Hookup.
Thanks for having me, Dee. It's great to be here.
Okay, so I obviously gave some examples, but how would you describe self-sabotage?
Look, self-sabotage is, in my opinion, this is not the dictionary definition, but in my clinical definition of it, it's anything that we do that gets in the way of what we want or need to be doing. So it's anything that we do over and over again, not just, you know, you binged true crime last night when you were supposed to be producing the next episode that you're making for the podcast. It's a one-off thing, or you procrastinated a bit. I mean, those are also versions of self-sabotage, but they need to be happening chronically in order for it to be self-sabotage, because what we're looking at is patterns of behavior over time.
Yeah, and you're obviously someone who's been working in this space for so long. What are some of the main ways, like, if you thought about all your clients and the people you've worked with, what are some of the things that keep coming up time and time again that people are self-sabotaging?
Well, you won't be surprised to know that love is a big one. So love is pick any area of life where we get a lot of meaning and purpose from. So love, we've got work, and we've also got parenting. And then we've got health. So I see self-sabotage come up in all of these areas of life over and over again, but for different reasons. So basically what we're doing is we're looking at human beings that are just naturally trying to avoid discomfort or pain. And so therefore they choose behaviors that feel better in the moment, but actually shift you or disconnect you from where you want to be in the long term.
In your book, you talk about it being a cycle, and there's a diagram. For people listening, what does that cycle look like?
Basically, it's the cycle of running away from what feels uncomfortable. So generally what happens is you'll go to do the thing. So let's say the thing is you want to download some dating apps and set up a profile. But the minute you think about doing that, you hear the horror stories in your head from your girlfriends or your boyfriends or your babies. And you think, oh my goodness, the fear just strangles you by the throat. And you think, I can't possibly put myself on a platter for that. My heart's too fragile for that. I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to repeat these horror stories that I've heard in my own life. And so when that fear shows up, then what's next is you do the thing that takes the fear away. So you might just simply procrastinate. You might simply give up and make an excuse that dating's not for you right now. Thanks very much. I'm actually good by myself, when you're deeply lonely and you know that that's not true. I'm not saying that it's true for everyone, but let's say it's not true for you. And then you might just simply do the thing that makes you feel better in the moment. You might numb through eating, or you might go and binge on whatever behavior it is that you don't particularly want to be doing, but it makes you feel better. Then what happens after that is you actually get a dopamine hit. And this is the problem with the neural pathways associated with self-sabotage is that they actually feel good in the moment. So you get this dopamine hit going, oh, relief. I didn't have to face the fear. This feels so much better. But then after that, what you get is this sense of, oh my goodness, I'm really frustrated with myself. And actually, I'm no closer to where I want to be in the world with my lovely connected relationship. And now I feel guilty and I possibly feel a bit ashamed, or I just feel irritated that I've done it again. And then those feelings become their own level of discomfort. And so you self-sabotage again, and around and around we go.
So in a way, could it be at the center of self-sabotage just a feeling that you're trying to avoid? Like, why, if we think about it in dating, right, if your goal is to feel loved and to be in a relationship and you really, really want that, maybe all your friends are in happy relationships and you think, oh, I really, really wish I was in something similar, and then you maybe download the apps like you said, or you go on a few dates and then you get in your own way by like canceling all the dates quickly because you're spiraling about, you know, all different things, or maybe you tell yourself that they're not the one, even though you haven't really given them a chance, or whatever it is. Like, there's lots of ways that people might self-sabotage in dating. Maybe that's overthinking or completely just ghosting or deleting all the apps when all of a sudden you've got a bunch of matches that people are keen on.
Yeah. Or presenting a ring on date two,
We
can go the other way with intensity as well.
Totally. Which I do want to talk about in a sec. But yeah, at the heart of it, what is the reason why people are self-sabotaging? Is there one, or can it be for so many different reasons?
Oh, I love this question so much, because so often I'm just asked to give like three steps and do the superficial stuff. But actually, the psychology that we need to be talking about is exactly this, Dee. We need to be talking about what is at the heart of this, because so often when you're self-sabotaging, you actually don't know. You don't realize that you're self-sabotaging in the moment, because simply you're doing what is human, which is to avoid discomfort. We are wired as human beings to not want to be uncomfortable. It really gets in the way because life is hard, or at least the most meaningful things in life are often the hardest. So generally, it depends on who it is, what the context is, and what the history is. But what I can say is that so often what's behind self-sabotage are unconscious negative beliefs. And those beliefs are often about the self. Now, when we're talking about dating and love, we're often talking about the worthiness wound, where someone is actually feeling not good enough most of the time, but it especially shows up when their attachment template is triggered. So when they put themselves on the line to go dating, then their vulnerabilities, their sense of vulnerability soars, and they're in a place where they actually feel really uncertain and they feel really unsafe, psychologically unsafe. Yet they may not even be able to recognize that. They may not have any awareness of it. And so instead, what we see is the behaviors and then the disconnection from self that follows.
I feel like I definitely self-sabotage in my past, but it wasn't running away from love. It was kind of what you were alluding to there, where it was like coming on really strong, not being like, yeah, hey, let's get married on date two. But I would just be like, this is all of me, almost be really intense, say my like hottest takes, my biggest opinions, my almost like overshare trauma. Like, it was almost like I wanted to give everything at the start. So then there was no chance of that person finding out things about me and then being put off by that later on down the track. Have you found that this is kind of another common experience of people, yeah, coming on really, really strong, being like, this is all of me, take it or leave it?
1,000%. I mean, I married a woman and gave her a garage door opener on day two. I mean, I'm very familiar with the lesbian urge to merge. Not that I identify as a lesbian, but I was married to a woman who is the most wonderful human, and we are no longer married. But I certainly understand that if I put it all on the table, then if you accept me, the acceptance is higher weighted. It has more value. Because if you know all this stuff that I see as defective about me, then the love is safer for me because you know it at the very beginning. So if you don't reject me after this, then this has a real chance. If you do reject me, then I expected it anyway, because I gave you all the stuff that I assume you won't be able to handle.
Yeah, which kind of feels to me like self-sabotage in the sense that you're not really giving that person, that's not a normal, like not saying your experience, but for me, like me being
no, my
like-
my experience wasn't normal. No, that's true. You yeah. can say that. Yeah.
But like me on date one being like, here's all my hottest takes and all my opinions and I'm this rah, 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 and this is me and we're coming on really strong. Of course, the other person's going to be freaked out by that. That's a normal human response to be like, this is really full on. And it's almost like, I don't know, sometimes I think, yeah, people can create this dynamic where it's like, see, I told you I was too much. I think at the heart of, yeah, for some people, you're either too scared that you're too much or you're not enough. Mm. And then for me, it was like the too much piece. And so then being like, oh my God, I told you they think I'm too much because I was being too much.
they still come from the same wound. So the wound's doing the same thing. Ultimately, you're going to reject me. That's what I'm frightened of here. And so whether the belief is I'm too much for you, so therefore I'm going to be too much for you to prove that belief, or whether it's I'm not enough and therefore I'm going to assume that I'm not enough and I'm going to shrink myself in our first date, it's the same worthiness wound. And so I think that the pattern there is still I can't be safe to be myself for the risk of rejection. The risk of rejection is the thing that we are largely as human beings, children running around in adult bodies, trying to avoid at all costs. And dating is one of I think it's a minefield now, and it's one of the things that is most difficult for us to do in this day and age, despite the fact that it's supposed to be more convenient for our listeners. I'm doing air quotes. But the thing is that the wound is the same here. You might run into love, which is what you're describing. You're going to run head first into this dating experience to give the too muchness to see whether or not it's acceptable, the same way that you might try to make yourself invisible.
That makes so much sense. Would you say there's a strong link between self-sabotage and people who are more likely to do it and insecure attachment styles?
Absolutely. Yes. However, I would also say that even people with secure attachment styles are vulnerable to what we might refer to as unhelpful dating behaviors when they feel most exposed, say, or most vulnerable. That's saying vulnerable twice in the same sentence, which is my editor wouldn't love if this was on paper, but we'll accept it. The thing to think about here is that when we feel we're performing or we're on show, so to speak, even someone with a secure attachment can find that difficult, is what I'm trying to say. It can still be difficult. Just because you're securely attached doesn't mean that you don't find it scary or overwhelming. You might still have feelings about it. But people with anxious or avoidant attachment styles or disorganized attachment styles generally will find that they'll lean one way or the other. So you said before, I was being too much. I was the problem. So when I did those second dates or whatever, when you broadcast all the things on that particular date that you were too much, I would argue that if you met someone that also had an anxious attachment style and the trauma response of oversharing in order to create connection, that might have been perfect for them and you might have trauma bonded for a while. So you have this beautiful intensity that feels like, oh my God, look at our chemistry and our passion and this is amazing and you're my person, until the wheels fall off later on when we all have to start cohabitating or doing whatever we're doing in a long-term relationship. So the insecure attachment styles certainly come with their templates that are difficult to maneuver around that we should be aware of. You don't have to be aware of anything, listeners, but what I invite you to understand is that sometimes awareness can be super useful if you're interested in growth. It's what we do with the awareness that matters. Sometimes when you become aware that you have an insecure attachment style, what I see follow that clinically is shame. And so people then beat themselves up for having an insecure attachment style. But it's not your fault. You were given it. You were given it by the people that raised you. And so the awareness isn't to then beat you up around the head with it. It's simply to just go, okay, this is interesting. This is how love feels for me. And so I need to just be aware that these behaviors might play out.
I love you bringing up shame, because I think that if someone is more likely to self-sabotage right a lot in their life, they've got this pattern, say, in dating and love, and it's like, I've now got a history of 5 to 10 years of, you know, freaking out as soon as I get too close, or you know, picking fights with my partner and quote unquote being too much or whatever it is. Surely at some point there's like a lot of shame when you realize that, right? Like, talk to me about the link between self-sabotage and shame.
Well, there's a link between the worthiness wound and shame that I want to link first, because what we see is self-sabotage. Self-sabotage will be on the surface of those things, okay? So self-sabotage, think of self-sabotage as the external manifestation of the worthiness wound playing out a shame cycle internally, okay? So we might see that 5 to 10 years of someone's dating cycle and they get to this stage in their relationship and then they run, or they never quite get past the 1 year mark because all of a sudden someone's too difficult for them or too much for them or whatever it is. And other people can see this playing out and they might call it self-sabotage. But what we then actually see behind the scenes, if we get in there and mess around with their feelings, which is what I do for a job, it's a pretty good job. I highly recommend it, is that we get to actually see that what that person is often doing is shaming themselves for not being successful in relationships. Having this feeling that there is a way to be successful and they're not hitting the mark and yet not knowing what to do about it. And that's when we get these cycles of self-sabotage that people keep repeating, but they don't actually understand why the repetition is there or how to change it.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that now, Bec, around how to spot it, because I'm assuming that most of us don't really know that it's happening in the moment. So yeah. For people listening, where's the first place that they can start in trying to recognize potential self-sabotage in their life?
Simply just looking at your history. So start by doing an inventory. I mean, you don't need to spreadsheet this. We don't need to get obsessional about it. But simply just looking at, have there been patterns that you have seen play out in multiple relationships? So if there's more than one relationship and you can see similarities in your own behaviors that didn't seem to be helpful at the time, what are they? That's it. So all we're doing is simply raising awareness first, because we can't do anything to change what's there unless we know what's there in the first place. And then look at what was behind why you did what you did. Because oftentimes you'll find that you actually had very good reasons for behaving like that at the time. But when we go looking at what those reasons were, they were discomfort with discomfort. So something happened. You got scared, or you felt overwhelmed, or someone didn't make you feel safe. And so therefore you performed in a way that made you feel inauthentic or whatever it was. And around and around we go, that what we actually see is that you're not comfortable with your own fear or your own sense of worthiness or whatever it is. So those, what we're looking is for patterns. Go looking for your own patterns and then look at the emotional patterns behind that. And that will show you where it's occurring.
How can you tell the difference between self-sabotage, or say, for example, you go into relationships and then as soon as someone, there's signs of maybe not being fully honest, right? Like say your gut feeling is telling you like, oh, something shady's happened here. And at the first sign, like maybe someone cheated on you in your past or something, but the first sign of something disingenuous or potentially lying and you just cut and run. How to tell if you're actually just doing the right thing and protecting yourself, or it's coming from a place of like self-sabotage of like, I'm scared and I'm scared of what I'm going to feel, or I'm scared of what I'm going to find.
I don't have an easy answer because you've asked about trust. So, and trust is a very specific topic, because then I can't answer this without talking about trauma, right? So sometimes if we're just dealing with self-sabotage, what we see is lots of kind of surface level behavior for uncomfortable emotions, but not necessarily traumatized brains dealing with trauma response templates, okay? And if you've been in a relationship before that has ended in infidelity or has had infidelity as a feature of it, then sometimes that's traumatic if it triggers betrayals of the past, including betrayals in childhood, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes people just are like, yeah, that guy was a dick. So, you know, I don't really care. I'm just not going back there for that type of man again. The difference between self-sabotage and, so I guess what you've said, Dee, is there's self-sabotage, then there's intuitive connection. And then what I'm bringing to the table as well is there's a trauma response, or there might be a trauma response. So if you have trauma as part of your background, the thing that I want to add here is that what can happen in dating in particular is it presses on templates of attachment which are born in childhood. So if you especially have been someone who experienced trauma as part of your childhood, then dating, the world of dating and the world of love, can be a far bigger minefield for you than for someone without a traumatized brain. So sometimes the behaviors that we see are actually trauma responses, like cutting and running at the first sign of even just smelling betrayal, rather than someone is intuitively connected and they think this doesn't feel right, so I'm actually not going to put myself in a position where I can be betrayed, and I'd rather know that I've cut it off at the pass than take the risk.
Let's flip that though and say, what if you're the one who's quote unquote self-sabotage is by doing the hurtful thing to other people? I have a friend who always gets really, really, at some point when the relationship's getting really serious, either starts potentially cheating, emotionally cheating, getting really drunk, doing drugs, not coming home, that kind of behavior. And I've seen this pattern play out. And to me, it looks like self-sabotage. What can listeners do if you resonate with that, of being like, hang on, I've got a bit of a pattern where things start to get really serious and I hurt that person?
The first thing is, who are we dealing with? So I guess my question as a psychologist would be, what's your core value system? Not yours, your friend's. But what's your friend's core value system? Because if that friend genuinely sees it as self-sabotage, then it's largely will be accompanied by a sense of shame for that behavior. And it will be a violation of their core value system. So they're uncomfortable with their own behavior and they might raise it with you in discussions like, fuck, I did it again, you know, like, and here I am, the source of someone else's pain again. Then yes, we might be dealing with self-sabotage. Again, we come back to, there's no amount of shaming that's going to be useful here. Guilt, on the other hand, can be very motivating. So guilt is the emotion above shame that prompts us to make amends, prompts us to change our behavior. Shame is very sticky. It's much stickier than guilt, and it can leave us in a hole where we just kind of wallow in the shaminess of it all. But with regards to making change, my first question is, does the person care enough to make change? Because self-sabotage gives benefits, Dee. That dopamine hit is really difficult to resist for some people. And to be able to call yourself out on your self-sabotage and then do something differently requires psychological effort. And I don't know about you, but I am a sloth in a human skin suit, and that includes psychological effort. And so if I'm going to make change at a level where I'm affecting where I get my dopamine hits, then the payoff has got to be meaningful at a values-led level. So let's assume for your friend that it is values-led. The friend feels ashamed about their behavior and they're like, I don't want to continue doing this. Once you've got the awareness, if we're talking that it's as frequent as what I think you're describing, I would say, please go and talk to a therapist about it. Please don't do this alone, because I don't want you to risk ending up in that kind of puddle of shame without someone to hold your hand and say, hey, this is what this is about, whether it's just avoidance of emotional discomfort or whether it's something deeper like trauma. But ideally, what we're looking at is that the person wants to make change in the first place, because this is the thing about self-sabotage. It is addictive simply because there's lots of benefits. You don't have to put in effort. You get the dopamine hit of avoiding the discomfort, and around we go, unless your guilt and shame get big enough for you to go, actually, I want to break the cycle.
And it's so hard on the receiving end as a friend as well, which I think a lot of people can relate to, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be this example, but maybe it's a friend that always drinks too much and then hates themselves the next day, or complains about their weight, but then, you know, cancels on the gym and then they complain about it to you all the time, or whatever it is. Like, yep. I feel like we are all guilty of doing that, right? Like, it's no matter what it is, but being on the receiving end of a friend who's spent years and years and years and years complaining about that,
the outcome.
The outcome of the self-sabotage. And you're like, I don't
Here
know.
I am still getting the consequences of my actions. Oh.
It's really tricky, because you're like, at some point, like, surely you've recognized there's this like really huge pattern here.
But again, even if they do recognize it, there can be a huge gap between recognition and change.
Yes.
And I guess that's the difference, is that as a psychologist, I don't get frustrated with that gap because I expect it. I just know how difficult it is to be a human, and to make that change occur and stay consistent. However, as a friend, when you're constantly seeing someone trip themselves up, it can be incredibly frustrating because you love them and because you want better for them. And so you want, it's really difficult to be the one that wants better for someone than they want for themselves in that moment.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we know we need to recognize it. That's part of the process. Potentially, if you can afford it, have access, go to therapy. For those that potentially might not, Beck, is there stuff that they can do at home before seeing a therapist, or maybe saving up for seeing a therapist, or in whatever capacity that they're able to access?
Absolutely. Therapy is a privilege. And this might be a controversial take, but I've tried it intentionally for myself before. I recommend it, and AI can be incredibly useful. If you want to run patterns past another objective kind of viewer. Now, AI can also, there's arguments to say that it's too agreeable, or sometimes it can be patronizing. So yes, it absolutely has its flaws, but therapy, it can be incredibly expensive. So AI can be useful if you want to talk it through, but I also really encourage people to go to their trusted people. So you're talking about a friend. If you're lucky enough, because again, a connection can sometimes be a privilege that's difficult to maintain depending on where you live and what resources you've got around you. Sometimes even if they're internet friends that you've never met in your life, if you feel safe with them, access that place of connection, especially when you're in the world of hooking up and dating. It's really important to have safe connections available to you, even if they're in the form of friendship, because what that does is it still fills up our love cup and it helps you to talk through stuff, even when that stuff isn't going in the direction that you want it to. So friends can be amazing counselors as well. The other thing that you can do is to consider accessing the world of self-help and podcasts, exactly like we're doing now. You can get a whole heap of information out there for free on attachment styles, on being able to recognize when your attachment style might be tripping you up, that can be useful in raising that awareness. And then after that, it's about choosing what you do with your discomfort. It's more than okay to make this change on your own. You don't necessarily need to see a therapist, but it's also worth understanding that if your background is complex, if there's been lots of betrayal, or if you've experienced other humans as unsafe psychologically, physically, or all of the above, then therapy is automatically a safe space as long as you vibe with the therapist. There's the other thing too. Not I'm a psychologist, but I'm not the psychologist for everyone. And whoever you go to see is exactly the same. We need to vibe.
Yeah, I've heard from a few people who have been nervous about going to therapy, then gone and like not gelled, and then never gone again. And it's such an important, that's such an important point to make. It's like, yes, try someone new.
Just test us out. We're still only human as well. And it's like any other relationship. We need to feel like we click to get some work done. So it's absolutely okay to see a therapist and go, nah, you're not for me, and not rebook. I actually ask people to not rebook if they don't feel like the vibe is there, because otherwise we can't get any decent work done. I don't want to waste your time or your money either.
And the important piece is rebooking with someone new, not just
Yes,
being like,
please keep trying.
not just being like, no, it didn't work. It's not for me. And also, I think I just want to flag as well, like reading books like yours, How to Stop Spiraling, getting a highlighter, getting a pen, so important. There's so much access in books like this one where you can like spend a lot of time on a certain chapter, go away, come back, work on those things that you talk about, and then keep reading.
Even if you've got, so even if you can't afford the $35 for the print copy, I've narrated this book. It's in audio. Like there are ways to access this information in formats that fit you. I think that's really important as well. It doesn't always have to be a formal therapeutic process, you know?
And a lot of these audiobooks as well, like yours, have sometimes a free trial or like, you know, a month for free. Just lastly, Beck, for people listening who are trying the intention, their heart's in the right place, but maybe they have fallen back in a few times. What's your advice around, you know, people who are feeling a lot of shame around that, or like, how to kind of be kinder to themselves?
Oh, goodness. My advice is I wrote a book called How to Stop Spiraling because I'm a professional spiraler, right? There's a reason the book is called How to Stop Spiraling and not How to Prevent Spiraling, because I don't know how to do that, right? And this is my job. I write books on this shit. And so it's really important to understand that being human is the hardest thing that we'll ever do. Please don't shame yourself, because it's not going to get you any further down the path. Even psychologists struggle with this stuff. So we expect you to struggle too. And the more you can bring compassion to the path of simply just trying to connect with yourself while you connect with others, then I think what you do is you open up possibilities rather than shut them down before you even start.
Beck, this has been amazing, honestly. I'm like, how have we not had you on the show before? So nice to have met you properly and to have had you on the show, and I know that we will continue to. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dee.